Happy Saturday, and thank you for joining me today. It was on April 10th, 1834, that a fire broke out in the French Quarter of New Orleans. Witnesses reportedly saw the woman who lived there trying to save all of her jewelry and fur coats, but her slaves were not helping her. When people asked where they were, she straight up told them to mind their business. That's not good enough because people are curious and they are going to go look, especially if other people reside there and you are the only one fleeing. So where are the other people? It was already odd enough that a very prominent, reputable Louisiana slave and homeowner's mansion had caught on fire and she was just flinging around looking for jewels and fur coats. So that didn't make any sense. So they rushed inside. And many recall hearing faint moans and screams coming from the attic. One person literally just burst into the house and took it upon themselves to find the slaves, since the lady who lived there didn't give them the keys and was more worried about her belongings. But when they got upstairs to open the attic door, they stopped dead in their tracks. Because what they found was such an abomination, it was so vilely repulsive, one of the most atrocious sights you could possibly ever see as a human being. Many people vomited right there just at the sight of what they had saw. What they had found that made this so appalling and so nauseating was apparently the torture chamber of the woman who lived there, Madame Marie Delphine LaLaurie. The room is described by witnesses as smelling like death, and many slaves were already dead. But for the ones who were still breathing, they were in so much pain, excruciatingly enough, that they begged to be killed. Allegedly, a 70-year-old slave cook who was chained to the stove by LaLaurie and was slowly starving, she started the fire. She was slowly starving to death. And I know that, yes, this is abhorrent, but that is very, 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 very much far from the worst of the most extreme of what she did. I will warn you if you have children in the room or if you just need, you know, a second. This is going to be hard to listen to, but this is reporting from Vice News about what happened. Quote, slaves were found chained, scarred, and starving. One paper noted that 7 were suspended by their necks and badly mutilated, while another mentioned a man while with a hole in his head filled with maggots. They had bloody welts, were living on gruel, and wore iron colors with inward-facing spikes, which seems like a tableau pulled from an archetypal medieval torture chamber. Heaps of corpses, organs, and limbs, slaves pinned to tables or cramped in small cages. Live bodies with their eyes gouged, fingernails torn out, hanging by shreds of skin, which were ears. Or their mouths filled with animal, rhymes with it, animal defecation, and their mouth sewn shut. I mean, forgive me, this is... It's hard just to tell this story. I mean, it was so insane and stomach turning just to write this. But the article goes on. People were flayed off with skin with festering wounds. Many accounts claim they found one woman whose skin had been peeled off in spirals to make her look like a caterpillar. Another with her bones broken and reset so that she looked like a crab. And one more whose intestines had been torn out of her and knotted around her waist. Many of these victims, some claim there were up to 100, were supposedly still alive, putrid and starving. End quote. In preparation for the show today, and writing this opening segment, I described, some parts of that story to my girlfriend. And initially, she didn't believe me because these actions were so extreme and so diametrically preposterous and barbaric, but they were true. And it's horrifying and beyond the conscience and capacity that human beings can even begin to conceive of that such a vile behavior actually took place. I mean, what is delineated here is sick. It is demonic. It is merciless. Slaves' mouths reportedly open and filled with animal defecation and then sewn shut? laid out on the table, their bones essentially reset so they could look like a crab. I mean, slaves were found strapped to tables, a man had been turned into a woman, a woman's arms had been amputated, faces of the dead grotesquely disfigured, someone wrapped in human intestines, and there were holes in people's skulls with wooden spoons nearby to stir their brains. That's how sick this was. Dead bodies were found not too far away in the attic, just mutilated beyond recognition. And for a while, these rumors were just rumors, but they were confirmed to be true. Madame LaLaurie was also saving slaves for her third and final husband, who was a doctor to practice on them with Haitian voodoo medicine. I mean, this was just incredibly sadistic. She got pleasure from and enjoyed inflicting pain on her slaves. And apparently all of this happened because she got spooked out by some stories in the newspaper about slave results that were happening in Haiti. As if that's some kind of excuse. She was born into an affluent family, and after her second husband died, she bought this house in New Orleans, and when she moved in, most of the city was shocked by how polite she was to her slaves. But it didn't take long for people to figure out that that was just an act. That was a deception. Because the abuse that she showed her slaves, rumors started going around. And the abuse that she showed her slaves was passed down just in a far less manner to her children. She would beat her children when they tried to help or feed the slaves. One time, a man was so scared of punishment that he jumped out of a third-story window. He leaped off the balcony to his death because he'd rather die than be subjected to whatever kind of torture Madame LaLaurie would have carried out. And just when you think this story can't get any worse, it does. And twist that knot that you already feel in your stomach from the heinous actions described. Before the fire revealed this amalgamation of a monstrosity, a little black girl named Leah was one of Mari's slaves and was brushing her hair one day, and she hit a tough spot. And unable to control herself or quite frankly do her own hair or perhaps even wash it before, Marie, in the most cruel and taunting way, chased after the little girl with a whip around the house, through the galleries, and all the way up onto the roof. The girl was so terrified that, just like the other man, she jumped off the edge. She leaped and she fell. She had fallen to her death. With no type of remorse whatsoever, she threw little Leah's body into a well. She was 12. She was only fined $300 for that. $300. And she was even forced to sell 9 of her slaves because, people began getting doubtful of her. But she was clever. As evil and sadistic and demonic as she was clever. And she sold those 9 slaves that she was forced to sell. She sold them to her family and then she bought them right back. And things just got progressively and expeditiously worse from there because there was an unmitigated crisis happening inside that house, inside that home, and no one knew the depths or the depravity of it until that fire in 1834. And after all those slaves were released from Madame Marie LaLaurie's home, which was engulfed in flames, a mob of about 4,000 enraged New Orleans citizens gathered and they ransacked the house. They smashed windows, they tore down doors, almost until nothing was left except the remaining structure itself. And they were looking for her. Not to talk to her or to praise her, but they were looking for her for vengeance because the acts committed here were so hyperbolic, they were so barbaric. And before they could even question her, she was gone. She already had fled. She left the country. She fled to Paris because she knew that the amalgamation of heinous behavior she executed would bring her down. and invite the criminal law to pursue justice, because this was so extreme even for slave owners back then. This was so extreme just in the city of New Orleans. This was so extreme just in the state of Louisiana, where, you know, slave punishments were a usual thing, just as across the rest of the country. This was a normal thing to transpire. But this was so extreme. This was so hyperbolic. This was so heinous that if she were there, probably still, she would have been murdered. She would have been arrested. Today, she is regarded as one of the world's most worst and notorious serial killers. Madame Marie Delphine LaLaurie eventually died in 1842. And to this day, her body has never been recovered. Vice News finishes their piece off like this, quote, "Some have taken this as a sign that LaLaurie was suffering from some sort of mental illness, but there's not a whole lot of actual proof that the mistress was insane, or even that she thought that this was unusual given the context she grew up in. The really scary truth about the bloody LaLaurie is that she didn't understand that what she did was wrong, because for a while on the plantations of Louisiana, what she did was mundane and routine. She was a monster, but she was part of a race of monsters who justified their existence to themselves as a logical, violent response to a disruption of the natural order of things." It says here, quote, "She was a demon, but not in the inhumane way that some would have you to believe. She was the evil almost anyone can become, put into stark contrast and canonized as a witch for openly displaying her tortures past their social and contextual expiration date." End quote. She had a literal torture chamber in the attic of her mansion. And it's not just like she would torture one victim, you know, after the slave dies or is killed, she you know, buries their body or something. She just left them there. This is a story that is not well known. It's not even well nationally known because it was so vile and so vituperative. It has largely been forgotten and buried, perhaps because of just the worst of its contents. But not in New Orleans. Not there. Her house still stands today. Reportedly, the house is completely haunted. What happened back then is still regarded today as one of the most despicable and sadistic acts in human history. Slavery was one of the world's worst atrocities. And this is a story that is so bad. It's not just one of the worst in human history. It's also one of the worst in just slavery history in general. I mean, when you think about slavery, when you hear about slavery, when you do research on slavery, watch documentaries and movies on slavery, yes, you see heinous crimes. You see stuff happen to slaves. Vicious, vicious crimes. With vitriolic behavior and rhetoric in the process. But this is something that is just on a completely different level. I mean, yes, slavery was one of the world's worst atrocities. Africans had their homes invaded and they were kidnapped. They were put on ships in bondage, a voyage that was so long and so vulgar that thousands died, and they were then thrown overboard as, you know, just save room, make room for more slaves. Male slaves had to sit in their own feces on these ships, and the women that were on these ships were used for pawns. They were used as entertainment. Slaves were raped. They were killed, had body parts cut off, and were severely whipped, leaving brutal marks, bruises that were so deep that they were pierced into their skin, pierced into the human flesh, which required hundreds of stitches if they ran away or were caught. Men, women, and children were separated from their families and sold to other plantations, some to never see their relatives ever again. Their lives were a consistent and perpetual form of torture, torment, abuse, trauma, and so much more. Just by the time slavery ended in 1865, that deeply rooted racial trauma, which so cruelly harbored in all Black families for generations, remained. Because generations and generations and generations of pain yet to be healed due to the horrors of racism and Reconstruction and the KKK. There was no break. No one enjoyed or benefited from slavery more than the slave masters that imprisoned and used them for labor themselves. No one benefited from slavery. nothing was good. That's why yesterday, when it circulated in news headlines that Florida is going to now implement new educational guidance that says there was a personal benefit to slavery, the nation shook. There was a rupture, a collective disdain and repugnant remarks that followed, because it is clear and concise that there was no personal benefit to slavery. There's nothing you could say about slavery that somehow implies that there was a benefit. There was nothing good about it. People were kidnapped from their home countries. They were brought here to a land that was stolen by the very people that kidnapped them. And there was continued torture and pain and rape and racism, and the cruelty was just so, so cruel, including one of the most heinous actions in human history and slavery history itself, with the murders, with the torture chamber of Madame LaLaurie. But it is clear and concise, because in this 216-page document, on page 6 of the Florida State Academic Standards for 2023 for social studies, it is now required to be taught in Florida schools that there was a benefit to slavery. Quote, clarification 1, instruction includes how slaves develop skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. End quote. What skills could you have developed as a slave that contributed to your personal benefit after slavery or even during slavery? The Vice President of the United States shares this same sentiment, just as infuriated and enraged as the rest of the country is looking at this. This was Vice President Kamala Harris earlier this week speaking on this report in Indianapolis.
And while they do this, check it out. They push forward revisionist history. Just yesterday in the state of Florida, they decided middle school students will be taught that enslaved people benefited from slavery. They insult us in an attempt to gaslight us, and we will not stand for it. It involved some of the worst examples of depriving people of humanity in our world. It involves subjecting to people the requirement that they would think of themselves and be thought of as less than human. So in the context of that, how is it that anyone could suggest that in the midst of these atrocities, that there was any benefit to being subjected to this level of dehumanization? In the midst of these atrocities, that there was some benefit.
Once again, that was Vice President Kamala Harris speaking in Indianapolis, Indiana, earlier this week. Mind you, this was a one-off decision. The State Board of Education approved this and proudly stands by it too, saying that we are happy to institute these standards for new African-American history. I kid you not, that is what the statement says. Don't believe me, Google it, because it's all over the internet. I mean, this new guidance... also includes teaching students that blacks contributed to violence and some of the most diabolical racial massacres. First of all, black people were targeted. Their homes were targeted, burned, and their brothers and fathers were hung for all to see. Black people did not perpetuate that violence. It was white supremacists and nationalists, neo-Nazis, and the KKK who appeared on their doorsteps and perpetuated and inflicted violence and pain on an innumerable amount of black communities. This is trauma that is still felt today, still talked about today. They were terrorized, domestic terrorism in these race riots, and you're going to teach people that somehow black people perhaps, you know, they hold a little bit of responsibility for that. When asked his opinion on this matter, the governor of Florida essentially just, you know, kind of shrugged it off. He really just spoke before the microphones and was like, you know, it's just like an addition to history. Like, what's the problem? This was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
I think what they're doing is I think that they're probably going to show some of the folks that eventually parlayed, being a blacksmith into doing things later in life.
So let me get this right. If you were a blacksmith as a slave, that somehow gave you... Okay. I can't even know what to say. I mean, the teachers union president in Florida, Andrew Spar, he told NBC News, quote, "How can our students be equipped for the future if they don't have a full, honest picture of where we've come from? Florida students deserve a world-class education that equips them to be successful adults who can help heal our nation's divisions rather than deepen them. Governor DeSantis is pursuing a political agenda guaranteed to set good people against one another. And in the process, he's cheating our kids. They deserve the full truth of American history, the good and the bad." End quote. I will just make one last point for the record before closing. 2 years ago, a teacher in South Lake, Texas was recorded on audio tape saying something that she really should not have said. And when this tape was released, it went viral. I mean, there are already problems in South Lake, Texas with racism and purported uses of the N-word. But what this teacher really said was really just really far stretch and extreme, even for her students to hear. Take a listen.
"Make sure that if you have a book on the Holocaust, that you have one that has opposing, that has other...
How do you oppose the Holocaust?
Quote, "Make sure that if you have a book on the Holocaust, make sure that it has an opposing view. How do you oppose the Holocaust?" End quote. This is almost too much idiocy and just, you know, frankly, preposterousness that it's almost too much for me to swallow for today. But you know what? We're going to get through this. We're going to get through this because we're almost through the first segment. But what that teacher said there, what that teacher said in this South Lake, Texas classroom is not too far off from what's happening nationally. A national unanimous conservative effort to rewrite our nation's history and also the world's history, quite frankly, because since we're going to talk about opposing views for the Holocaust, there's nothing to oppose. There's nothing that can justify that type of heinous, cruel human genocide. I mean, what's happening right now nationally includes book bans, this conservative effort to rewrite our nation's history and the world's history. We are seeing book bans. We are seeing rewritten courses in history. The concealing of the worst history from our nation's children. Concealing all of it, rewriting all of it, making it seem like, oh, it's actually better. Like, you might have benefited from slavery, perhaps. Slavery was not a walk in the park. Slavery was not fun. There were no benefits. They were subjected to a lifetime of torture and abuse. And if you, like Ron DeSantis and apparently Florida Republicans who are so golly about this, if you question that, then just consider the slaves who were viciously slaughtered and tortured by American serial killer and slave owner Marie Delphine LaLaurie, who eventually cowardly fled the country to avoid accountability for her despicable actions. There was nothing good about slavery. No one benefited. It was completely heinous and barbaric and the worst of it. Much more ahead tonight. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Whether you put down your phone to be there for your daughter, or pick up your phone to call a helpline for your roommate, when it comes to mental health, now more than ever, every action counts.
President Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble, and that you know, particularly refers to legal trouble. First of all, the investigation in Georgia is getting very, very hefty. That relates to when President Trump called the former President Trump called up the Secretary of State in Georgia and asked him essentially to add on more votes so he could take the state of Georgia. That's under investigation. Also, the illegal electors plot is under investigation, where electors reportedly wanted to, you know, hey guys, let's just sign fake electors and send them to the National Archives and Congress and make it look like it's real and declare these states for Trump instead of Biden. These unofficial documents that were signed and sent to the National Archives so it could be portrayed as the official documents, that is under investigation. Also, Trump is a target of a Justice Department investigation when it comes to the January 6th insurrection. But the trouble, specifically the legal ramifications that we're talking about right now, is the fact that Trump's documents trial has just been set. You may remember a couple months ago here in the Jeremiah Patterson Show, we reported that Trump was being arraigned in court for this Justice Department indictment on these classified documents that were taken to his private residence / golf course / clubhouse in Mar-a-Lago in Florida. Well, that trial is now set for May of 2024. And that is very interesting timing, given we are running up in towards the 2024 presidential election. And also, just a lot is really happening right now. So that time cuts very, very, very close. We're going to have more reporting on the 2024 presidential race right now and the developments in that. But here's reporting from ABC News on what this means now that date has been set.
Turn now to the major news tonight involving former President Trump. We now know when the federal criminal trial over classified documents will begin. The former president and his legal team had asked the judge to delay the case until after the election. She did delay the trial, but not until after the election. Instead, it will play out just months before the crucial presidential election in this country. Here's Terry Moran.
Federal Judge Eileen Cannon setting a trial date of May 20th, 2024 for the classified documents case against former President Trump in Florida and striking a middle ground, calling special counsel Jack Smith's request for a trial this coming December inconsistent with ensuring a fair trial. But Judge Cannon, who was appointed by Trump, also rejecting Trump's call to postpone any trial until after the 2024 election, acknowledging the public's interest in a speedy trial. Trump's campaign claiming victory, calling the ruling a major setback for prosecutors. But the reality is Trump will now be on trial in front of the American people just months before the election. On the campaign trail, Trump's trying to turn it all to his advantage.
I consider it to be a great badge of honor and courage. I'm doing it for you. I'm being indicted for you.
But he will now have to show up for at least two criminal trials right in the middle of the 2024 campaign. First in March, when he will be in a Manhattan courtroom to face charges relating to his payment of hush money to porn star Stormy Daniels. Then the documents case in May, and he's bracing for two more criminal indictments. As soon as Monday, as Trump himself has predicted, he could face an indictment and arrest in connection with the efforts to overturn the 2020 election, culminating in the attack on the Capitol. And in Georgia, he could face state criminal charges stemming from alleged efforts to change the election results there. That decision could come in a few weeks.
That is reporting from ABC News there on the prospects of the, you know, the criminal culpability and the criminal, you know, criminal probability right now. And as prospects are just high, as former President Donald Trump is just souring and souring in just deep, deep criminal problems. We've got a lot more to get to tonight. Stay with us.
I love my new home. I always wanted a house with historic architecture, but it might be too Victorian.
Hey, gosh, interesting hemline on those pants.
Yes, I do believe they're called pants.
Pardon me.
No, pardon me. At least Geico makes bundling my home and car insurance easy. I save so much.
I have come to call upon you.
Just text me. Well, I'm heading up.
It's a ghost.
For bundling made easy, go to geico.com.
It's called self-care.
Welcome back. It is hot outside, and I mean really hot. Every time we think we've reached the hottest summer, Yet, the heat wave just gets more intense, but we have been here before. The deadliest heat wave of 1913 was just unbearable. Temperatures reaching 134 degrees Fahrenheit on July 10th, 1913 in Death Valley, California. That was a very hot year for Californians and, quite frankly, just everywhere. It was just too extreme for that type of heat to engulf the Earth. Well, welcome to the 21st century, where the Earth is only getting hotter because for 4 days in a row straight, ever since this month started in July, we experienced some of the hottest days on record. That's four consecutive days that the world was proverbially on fire. In Italy, they have just essentially overcome their heat wave, and they are now dealing with giant hailstones. According to the Washington Post, quote, parts of northern Italy were pummeled by giant hailstones larger than tennis balls this week, according to local officials, while one town's streets were overtaken by an icy river, just days after the country experienced a scorching heat wave that broke temperature records in Rome. Videos shared on social media and local media showed large chunks of ice floating through the streets. On Friday, while a mini tornado was seen in Milan, firefighters in Milan said that they had been responding to building damage and falling trees in the aftermath of the storm, local media reported. Earlier in the week, videos also showed loud lightning storms in Mantua in the Lombardy region of Italy as giant hailstones beat the ground. Extreme winds and hailstorms also gripped Veneto, injuring about 110 people, according to the regional governor. So, this is not something that's foreign to just the United States. This is something that's happening all over the world. But if you do look at the United States more closely, what you will see is that the southern part of the U.S. is experiencing heat like never before. I mean, I grew up in South Carolina, born and raised in Charleston. And, you know, it's hot. It's hot down here. It's hot in the south. As typically it should be. It's hotter than the north, really, because that's how, you know, like, that's how the equator works and stuff. But it's not a type of heat that us southerners are used to. We were not born into this type of heat. Yes, we can expect for it to be hot here, or atypically, you know, 90 degrees. But when it's 90 degrees for 70 days straight, and even sometimes casually shooting up into the third, you know, three-digit temperatures, that is not normal. That's not normal. And one of the cities where essentially it is extremely, extremely hot is Phoenix, Arizona. This is reporting from the Washington Post, quote, the top 10 hottest nights on record in Phoenix have occurred in the past 20 years. Despite nearly 130 years of continuous bookkeeping, that's probably a symptom of both warming from greenhouse gas emissions and the urban heat island effect on the expansion of buildings and paved surfaces that elevates city temperatures. Ah, so it's climate change. It's not surprising. I mean, I've been reporting on it for years here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show, but, you know, essentially you really kind of do feel like in the spirit of giving up at this point because nothing is happening. Literally no meaningful legislation. There's really nothing happening, really. But what's happening in Phoenix, Arizona, you know, it's definitely not normal. People in Phoenix, Arizona are getting third-degree burns just by being outside on the sidewalk. If you know anything about me, I typically like to go outside. When I go outside, I typically walk outside with no shoes on sometimes, and like even in the summer. And the pavement here in Texas, when you walk on it, it's scorching hot now. So I rarely do that now. But I don't get third-degree burns. But apparently, if you are a resident of Phoenix, Arizona, you are getting third-degree burns now if you walk outside, you know, just to go check the mail. This is from HuffPost. Quote, a Phoenix burn doctor is warning of the severe injuries people are experiencing after making contact with pavement as the city contends with a brutal heat wave. Quote, we are seeing lots of patients who are falling down onto the concrete pavement, asphalt, and suffering really, really deep burns as a result of that. The article goes on. In those kinds of situations, the burns are almost always third degree. On a hot afternoon, Black asphalt can get 170 to 180 degrees Fahrenheit. Those who get burned are often older people who fall down and are unable to get up, or people who have fallen down due to medical conditions. It tends to make these injuries really, really bad because people just stay down for a prolonged period of time. Phoenix multi-record breaking heat wave has scorched the city with temperatures that have reached at least 110 degrees for 21 consecutive days so far. Arizona's capital is one of the many places worldwide frying as a result of human-caused climate change combined with the El Nino climate pattern. Air Force veteran Christopher Malcolm told NBC News about the severe burns he received from a sidewalk about 2 weeks ago in Las Vegas. While waiting for a bus in 110-degree temperature, the 73-year-old sat down on the ground and was burned through his blue jeans seriously enough that he's now scheduled for surgery. Quote, "This level of heat wave we are having in Phoenix right now is enormously dangerous, particularly for people who either don't have air conditioning or cannot afford to operate their air conditions." That is according to a senior analysis for the Georgia Institute of Technology's Urban Climate Lab, Evan Mullen. So consider that Arizona right now is under an extreme extreme heat wave right now, an extreme duress. Consider that, right? Consider that Arizona is having an extreme amount of heat right now. They are under an intense amount of distress and even physical pain. And apparently this is the perfect time for Border Patrol to pull another immigration stunt. Because according to The Intercept, Border Patrol is now caging migrants outdoors in Arizona during this deadly heat wave. According to reporting by The Intercept, this is the lead, quote, "The U.S. Border Patrol is holding migrants in an outdoor pen in a deadly stretch of the Arizona desert amid a record-setting heat wave. On Thursday afternoon, The Intercept observed roughly 50 migrants confined in a chain-like pen at the Ajo Border Patrol Station, a highly remote outpost 2 hours of Tuscan. From a ridge overlooking the Border Patrol's facility, the migrants could be seen gathered under a carpet-like structure, crowding themselves into a single narrow strip of shade to escape the desert sun. The only furniture available was a short stack of metal bleachers baking in the extreme heat." End quote. When we talk about cruelty just on a whole nother level, I mean, this is exactly one of them. I mean, we just had that reporting a couple of days ago about what's happening in Texas. Just had that reporting yesterday about what's happening in Texas. Now we have this in Arizona. It is extremely hot. Extremely hot outside. These are not normal temperatures. And in Arizona, it's worse. 110 degrees for 20 consecutive days straight. I mean, these are not typical temperatures. These are extremely high, scorching hot outside. And yet the only available furniture for these migrants is a metal bench, a metal bleacher, which of course is getting baked by the sun because it's outside. This is not some inside tent or some, you know, cage inside of this Border Patrol facility. This is outside of the Border Patrol facility. And it's so hot that the migrants are having to huddle in a little tiny corner. In a corner. To escape the sun. The article continues, quote, "Just one day earlier, Tuscan set a new record with 11 consecutive days of temperatures exceeding 111 degrees. The unincorporated community of Ajo and surrounding areas have been even hotter, with Thursday's high hitting 114 degrees. This reporting came out yesterday. This is new. According to the statement, the U.S. Border Patrol has urged personnel and transportation resources in recent weeks to respond to a significant increase in encounters near Ajo, Arizona, some of the hottest, most isolated, and dangerous area of the southwest border, where individuals have been callously sent by smuggling organizations to walk for miles, often with little or no water. A spokesperson for Customs and Border Patrol Protection, the agency that oversees the Border Patrol, said in a statement to The Intercept on Friday night. The Border Patrol is prioritizing expeditiously transporting non-citizens encountered in the desert environment, which is particularly dangerous during current weather conditions, to USBP facilities where individuals can receive medical care, food, water. Oh, really? It does not look like that's happening, because according to The Intercept and according to the images that they have taken, it just looks like migrants are in cages outside. The article continues. CBP did not answer several specific questions from The Intercept, including how long people are being kept outside in the heat, whether children are among those who have been kept outside, and whether anyone held outside has required emergency medical care. The agency did, however, reiterate its standard practice to provide medical screening for migrants upon arrival to the Ajo station, and said that migrants held outside are provided with a large canopy, large fans, hot meals, water, and bathrooms. According to The Intercept, there have been no reports of any type of canopy outside of this facility. That was according to The Intercept's observation outside of the Ajaho station. If you look at these images, you can see clearly that there are migrants being detained outside in the extremely hot Arizona weather with nothing, literally nothing. A canopy is supposed to be like a tent, you know, like a little shaded area, so they don't have to be in the sun, at least. But that's not even out there. According to a volunteer with the Phoenix branch of No More Deaths in the Ajo Samaritans, he says here, quote, "We are absolutely horrified at learning about how people are being treated at the border wall and the Ajo Border Patrol station. It is inhumane. This is abject mismanagement of a situation that could have been predicted and should have been planned for. The lack of resources equates to neglect, and it is at the point of extreme physical endangerment and abuse." He goes on to say, "We hear from other involved humanitarian aid groups that many agents on the ground want the resources to adequately take care of folks. Yet it seems that upper management is failing to address the situation to point of difference." This is just absolutely ridiculous. We're going to have more reporting on this on the Jeremiah Patterson Show tomorrow. I did not expect to come in to report tomorrow, but you know, there are certain things that require major attention and immediately. It was just reported on Wednesday that officials in Maricopa County north of Ajo reported that at least 18 people have died from heat in Phoenix this year, just this year, with 69 other cases under investigation. Those are 18 civilians. So what makes you think that migrants are going to be just fine outside? Absolutely insane. This is just days after the Texas report becoming to release, and the U.S. Justice Department is getting ready to sue Texas for that. Once again, we're going to be reporting on this here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show tomorrow at the top of the show about what's happening here in Arizona and what's also happening just frankly across the country when it comes to the wrongful treatment, the abhorrent treatment of migrants who are coming to this country to secure a better life. But it is inconceivable. We'll be right back.
Introducing Tide Power Pods
with Catnet. I love how much I can stuff into these machines, but that is such a large load. Don't the stains sneak through?
Please. New Tide Power Pods can clean that whole situation.
You just toss it in before the clothes.
It's like two regular Tide Pods and then some power and then even more power.
With 50% more cleaning power, even your large load got clean.
How many kids do you have?
Girl, I lost track. There's a lot of kids. And then there's a husband. Then there's me.
That's a lot of clothes.
All right, so that does it for me today on this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show, officially wrapped up three segments. We were actually running errands today earlier this morning, and I typed the entire first segment in the car. I kid you not, I finished 7 pages, more than 2,000 words, sitting down in the passenger seat in the car. Surprising. I know. How can someone have so much focus? Really, thank you so much for being here on this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. I am going to publish this and then rest, literally rest, and then get back to work because now I'm coming back tomorrow since humanity cannot get it together ever. I know this is incredibly sad. That is why it is important to be a news reporter during times like these. But thank you again for listening to this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, share it with your family and friends, please. And make sure to tag along for the rest of the journey because there is a lot of news and a lot to be reported when it comes to TJPS. And we have lots of special reports coming your way and lots of exclusives and interviews. And we hope you are here to be with us through it. Don't know if that makes sense. But thank you for listening. Have a great day. Remember to stay positive and inspired, and take care.